my dear associates in the path, on this auspicious occasion of the birthday of our dear master, Sri Ramchandra Ji Maharaj of Shahjahanpur, India, it is but prudent to evaluate our spiritual practice and spiritual progress. We have had occasions to share our experiences, to evaluate our meditational states. It is necessary to identify the conditions and states we are expected to gain access to. Enough has been written and spoken earlier on many occasions about the stages of progress, and we also developed tools to assess our progress in the path based on the Ten Commandments of the path and the spiritual conditions that get delineated as per the book Towards Infinity. The aspirants in the path have different reasons and expectations as the outcome of their practice. From the statements of aspirants joining our training programs, we can list out some of their expectations. Many who have mainly the benefit of stress reduction as an outcome of spiritual practice here in the beginning. Let us clarify why we are meditating. Meditation is being sold in the West as a stress reduction technique. It can help reduce stress, but its original purpose is to help us realize our true state. Meditation is not a sleep aid. Several meditational practices like mindfulness practice on a daily basis is said to offer stress relief. But we are all practicing the natural path of our master, in which we insist on goal clarity and do not compromise with lesser benefits. We should realize the path chosen by us fixes before us the ultimate as the goal of life. Conditions like peace, bliss and balance are not our goal. We may and we do get relaxed many a time, and it is wiser to be advised on that. There's a tendency among the aspirants that we are to seek bliss. The words and conditions associated with the Sachidananda unfortunately confuse many. The Sanskrit word for meditation is bhavana, which means mental cultivation or mental development. The word mental in this case does not refer to just thinking and reason, but a wide spectrum of mind-body functions, sensation, awareness, emotions, attitudes, predilections, so on. One way to think of bhavana is that it is a kind of training. We are training the mind to understand and experience in a different way. Contrary to popular notions of Raja Yoga meditation, however, the point is not to go to some happy place away from the problems while we meditate. A regular meditation practice may enable us to confront the root causes of our problems and let them go. But this is the opposite of escapism. However, Master always advises not to push ourselves to conjure up visions or the unaccountable sensory experiences, which most of the time are just our neurons misfiring. As they do not mean anything in spirituality, we are advised not to attach to them. There are, however, occasions when we do have satori, but it is also necessary to realize there is something like a premature satori, which happens when we push ourselves into deep meditative state before we are properly prepared for it. This is a bit like attempting to compete in a marathon without training for it. The results will be frustrating at best, and dangerous at worst. There is a tendency to find out whether the meditation was good. We are the best judge about it, and to ask another question that question is not very relevant. Please do not judge whether your meditation was good or bad. Do not judge your meditational practice. When I say judge not, I am only saying not, do not evaluate. I mean the meditation. If we started to practice the system and are meditating regularly and start fretting and fuming that it is not yielding the results expected, know that such an expectation is itself the detrimental cause of this exasperation. It's our attitude of expectancy that is the problem. Do not try to compare on earlier meditational sessions with another one. That may lead to undesirable condition of ungratefulness. More experienced and advanced sadhakas may sometimes judge themselves during Chitlek camps. We may find ourselves slogging through meditational periods, sleepy or uncomfortable, or unable to focus because we keep thinking about our jobs or marriages or passports or visas. And when the period ends, we are frustrated and unhappy with ourselves because we think we are not meditating properly. This judging is a problem in two ways. One, if we continue to think negatively, it will spill over into the next meditational period and the one after that. Second, the truth is that sometimes the sessions, when our knees ache and our mind will not be still, or great training. It's our workout on the exercise cycle. When we judge, we are getting stronger. And sometimes a really awful meditational period will be followed by an amazing one. Meditation is waiting on master. Please do not judge. Many systems of yoga are very strict about the body postures during meditation. Some schools of Raja Yoga, however, offer a choice of the positions of legs during meditation and may even allow the aspirant to meditate in a chair. But that does not mean teachers who insist on a particular body position and who correct you if you slouch or fixated at the anal level. There are two primary reasons why some schools make a big fuss about meditation body posture. One reason is that schools in which the practice involves sitting still for longer stretches of time have learned that there are safe and not so safe ways to do that. Especially if you are in less than peak physical condition, sitting still can be remarkably painful. And if we are not doing it right, we could damage joints, squeeze organs, or cut off circulation in limbs. Many generations of practitioners figured out exactly how to position ourselves to avoid serious pain or injury, and this experience has given us the approved meditational postures. The posture which is comfortable for us to meditate is advised with the condition that the body is erect or a bit bent forward in the system of our master. We have all found this comfortable. However, there are some who bend so much that their heads get into the stomach, so much so the heart itself is out of view of the aspirant. The other reason is that the body position really does affect meditational experience. In our system, meditation is not something we do only in our head. It engages the entire body and mind, and more essentially in the heart. Experienced meditators nearly always come to appreciate that exactly how the spine is aligned, and they automatically correct their posture. They change their posture and certain times their gesture according to the knot in which they are traveling. When we switch our attention towards certain centers, not out of our own volition, but because of the need at that point of time, there is change in the posture, and the condition of being rigid about posture would be rather irrelevant. We are advised to meditate on the divine light in the heart, and we start searching for that light inside. Though the heart is inside, physically the psychological heart covers the entire body, and as one advances in sadhana, the divine light is perceived not only inside our whole system, but the system itself expands to cover the universe. The true state of realization is not within or without, it is everywhere. Master's blessing grants this wisdom as we practice, if advised properly. We may compare practice to a stringed musical instrument. If the strings are too tight, they will break. If they are too loose, they will not play notes. Sometimes aspirants begin practice with a huge enthusiasm and set impossible meditation schedules and goals for themselves, and they burn out and quit. This is like the tight string that breaks. And others do not commit to practice and only meditate occasionally. This is being too loose. Revered Babaji prescribed a schedule of meditational practice into a life already stuffed with the job, family and other obligations of a householder, and set a moderate meditational pace. There is no valid reason to change this and try to improve over the advice of the master. There are many books that provide good instructions as to how to meditate. Even so, I strongly recommend seeking the guidance of someone recognized as a trainer in Revered Babaji's system of Raja Yoga. It is not enough that we are introduced into the system. It is necessary that we try to maintain one-on-one relationship with the trainers. Only when he suggests that we may go to another experienced adept shall we do so, and we should avoid hopping from one trainer to another for reasons we are ourselves not clear about. It is possible that we may judge the trainer and feel it is better to go on our own. If we are committed to do it yourself, still I would suggest that meet the trainer once or twice a year and discuss with him during the annual congregations. You will find yourself how having someone who knows you and who can give you one-on-one advice when you need it can make a huge difference. Practice with humility, however. The most important aspect of meditational practice is to loosening our bonds through viveka and vairagya. Attachment of any type is attachment only and is a bond. The only attachment we can have is the attachment to our goal. Our determination to implement or attainment to the Ten Commandments of our Master, when diligently followed, makes us realize that we are not insulated beings. We realize slowly but surely that we are not something enclosed within this skin, and everything beyond the skin is the other. For this reason it is stressed by masters that if we practice only to benefit ourselves, it will probably not work. Although we may all begin practice seeking remedy for ourselves, if our practice is sincere, we will become more sensitive to the sufferings of others and wish to benefit them. Otherwise, our meditational practice can amount to brood in a cage of our egos, reinforcing the self and the other dichotomy instead of dissolving that. Thus it is for this reason the experience of meditating in satsang is hugely beneficial. One of the potential perils of a solo practice is that practice can become an intensely personal thing that is ours and ours alone, and which may become compromised if shared with others. This is the common phase many of us go through actually. One of the fruits of practice is a natural turning away from the self, clinging to the border between self and other selves. Sharing practice with others facilitates this. On the one hand, if we remain stuck in "I can do it myself" mode, we are going through the punishment awarded by nature. If we find ourselves self-defensive at the idea of meditating with others or consulting with a trainer, consider this as a warning sign that there is an unhealthy amount of ego attachment in our practice that is attracting punishment. This inclination to meditate alone or in a group is an indication of the punishment of nature. These are some of the pitfalls of our problems in sadhana that I thought I can share with you all. There may be many more. With the blessings of our Master, we can overcome them and reach our goal sooner. May God bless you all. Pranams.